You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Seth Kaiser of Arrowhead Pride, the Chief of the North podcast, at Real MN Chiefs Fan on Twitter. Is there anything else that people need to know that you do?
I don't sleep, but beyond that,
right, good.
That's all.
With Joshua Briscoe.
You will find Seth Kaiser everywhere except for in his or your bed, because not only does he not sleep, he's also a faithful husband. So that's important.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Okay, so we're going into the second hour currently of Almost Entirely Sports. And so if you're just tuning in now, the next 5 seconds are going to be very confusing to you. But this show does that pretty frequently. On the poll, who wants to date at Beards McFly? 29% of voters have said me. 71% of voters have said somebody, I'm sure. Ooh, we're down to 25 to 75. 8 votes in, though. So 2 people have said they want to date you, Beards. I know that you voted that for yourself just so you wouldn't get shut out, but someone else was
also... I actually also had a burner account.
We're up to 2 people, up to 2 candidates here for Beards'.
I bet
love
Seth's
life.
Really confused.
Yeah, well, listen. You know what? We're talking to Seth Kaiser now from Arrowhead Pride. He's on Twitter at Real MN Chiefs Fan. All the stuff I just said, the Chief of the North podcast, I said all that in the liner. He's also a faithful man who doesn't sleep. I feel like Seth has been on with us often enough to not necessarily understand what's going on right now, but to, like, get it. Is that fair, Seth?
Yeah, sure. Why not? That sounds... No, I actually saw the poll earlier, and, you know, I was going to vote, but I didn't have a proper knowledge of, you know, Beards McFly's cooking skills, what kind of cuddler he... I mean, I don't know these things, so I couldn't vote without that kind of information.
Okay, this is a great point. Beards, what kind of cuddler are you? Are you a big spoon, little spoon? Are you an aggressive cuddler? Do you
aggressive cuddler?
Do you have disdain for human touch?
I don't know what an aggressive cuddler is.
You're looking at one right now, I'll tell you that.
It sounds like someone who needs an attorney, honestly. I don't think that's something you want to be.
Listen, I'll capture this on a public setting right now. I am an aggressive cuddler in a consensual sense. Only, exclusively.
Comma, officer. What? What if I... See, this would be the time if I represented you, Josh, where I would, like, put my hand over the mic and say, hey, stop talking. Don't say another word to the judge. Let me do my job.
All right, I'm going to in the future never represent myself in any of these cases. I will let you
there
come
we
in.
Go. I feel like my work here is done. Whew.
Okay. Wow. That's good. All right. So this is the problem with today's show, Seth, is that we've almost talked about Tom Bahali for, I kid you not, 64 minutes. 64 Holy. Minutes today, we've almost talked about Tom Bahali, and every time Ooh. Something has gone wrong before we've ever gotten there. Like, that's a pretty
sure.
big story, and we keep getting jumped by Deshaun Watson out for the year. Mm-hmm. Beards' phone number got tweeted out by one of the producers over at 810 accidentally.
Oh, no.
And then this is where we are now. So all of a sudden, we've been on air for now 65 minutes. And I've barely even said that Tom Bahali has been activated, and we haven't talked about the run defense at all today. So I thought we would be able to sort of burrow down.
I dragged you further afield.
It's
that's
okay.
Bad.
No, that's where I want to be.
Change the name to like almost occasionally sports or something like that.
That's where I want to be, though. It's the perfect place for this show to reside. If you haven't read it yet, Seth put out a really good piece on the problems with the Chiefs' run defense. He does sort of kill your theoretical puppy with his first reason that the Chiefs' run defense is struggling. It's a really great read. We'll walk you through it a little bit here. I'll let Seth explain the logic behind each of his points and everything. But it's a really good read. It's a really quick read. And again, Seth kills a puppy. So, Seth, you've given these three issues with the Chiefs' run defense, and at least a couple of them feel very much amendable. The first one, though, is the one that is probably the most hard to fix, because you said the first issue is interior linebacker play, and because so far you write in 2017, Derek Johnson hasn't been Derek Johnson. So what did you see, and then why did you tell all of us that Santa wasn't real like that?
I felt like there was too much joy in the world, and I thought I'd kill some of it. Look, I say all of this as a caveat that DJ is one of the greatest Chiefs that I've ever witnessed, and one of the greatest run defenders I've ever watched. Yeah. Unbelievable player for so long. All right, here's what I observed on film. There's a lot of people saying, oh, DJ's lost three steps, he's slow. That's not quite the issue that I'm seeing. He does look a little slower, but it's almost impossible to tell because, frankly, the decisions he's making are terrible from what I'm seeing. And, you know, man, maybe someone who knows more than me could, you know, send me a message and say, hey, you're an idiot, you don't know what you're talking about, DJ's doing fine. And I would love that. No one would be happier than me over that. What I saw, though, because I watched every snap in the Broncos game and run defense to try to figure out what the problem was, and what I saw multiple times, let's just take Jamaal Charles' 18-yard gain, right, for the Broncos. This is a horrible conversation, by the way.
It is.
Talking about a Jamaal Charles 18-yard run for the Broncos because Derek Johnson made a mistake. This is awful.
I told you, anyway, we were in a happier place before we actually had to talk about the Chiefs. And also the Chiefs, by the way.
Yeah, then it just all went downhill.
The Chiefs, so, like, at least a top four team in the league. This is the place where we get sad now.
Yeah. So what happened on that play, if you watch, there are a few things that went wrong to an extent. But the primary issue is that DJ basically jumped out of the gap.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a GIF of it up on Twitter where you see it happen. Now, gap responsibility can be a tricky thing, especially if you're not in the room with the linebackers when they're being coached up. But I've never heard of it being a linebacker's responsibility to jump out of the open gap and let the running back fly through it.
Right.
And so because of that, it went from what might have been like a 4 or 5 yard gain maybe to an 18-yard gain. And what I saw from DJ is he's backpedaling, he's hesitating, he's picking the wrong gaps, he's a step slow, and I don't mean a step slow as in like he looks old.
Mm-hmm.
I mean he's hesitating so long that he's just not going. It's like, it's interesting, it's mistakes you often see from a younger player. Yeah. He's just playing very hesitantly from what I can see. And it's tough to watch because you'll see plays where you're like, man, I am certain that last year he would have blown that up.
Yeah.
And he's just not quite getting there. Now, here's the thing, though, I will say about that, because I think with each one of these points, I think I need to put a glimmer of hope in there, because otherwise people are going to be in a dark place by the time we're done here.
Right.
The one thing I will point out, and I've got a few gifs of this as well, he does still occasionally make one of those DJ plays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was one in particular where he basically, like, transported through two blockers to be, you know, it's like he appeared in a puff of smoke in the backfield in front of Jamaal Charles. And that's the kind of thing we're used to seeing. And so he does still appear to have some agility there. He does still appear, I think, to have some speed there. Now, I don't think he's ridiculously fast as he used to be, but he does still appear to have some explosion. It's the mental stuff that seems off. His angles are weird. He just isn't playing like himself, and that has been a massive problem on run defense because they rely on him because of what they do schematically to be great. And anything less, especially really bad, results in a bunch of huge gains on the ground.
And you have a little bit here also about Reggie Ragland having some of those similar sort of hesitation issues, not for
Correct.
All the same reasons, but with at least some of the same results. And that makes more sense for a younger player. You mentioned that he's essentially a rookie right now, and he's, you know, getting into the NFL speed fully. One thing that I guess you can tell me if this is a fair speculation or not. Whenever I see the two starting inside linebackers, or at least the two most frequently used inside linebackers, whatever, having the same mistakes, I sort of at least have a little thought shoot across my brain to go, coaching question mark? And I don't know if that looks like that's a Bob Sutton thing, if that's a Gary Gibbs thing. And Gary Gibbs has had really, really good linebacker production in his time as Kansas City, so that makes me think that's probably not the issue. But Seeing hesitant linebackers makes me wonder why they're hesitant, especially for Derek Johnson.
I happen to know for a fact, because someone who would know for a fact has communicated with me regarding, not this year, but regarding what they want out of the Chiefs linebackers. Mm-hmm. And it just depends snap by snap. Sometimes it's pin your ears back and hit a gap. Sometimes it's more read and react. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I don't like the fact that they don't have one consistent job. Now, there's no scheme that makes linebackers do the same thing every snap. That's fictitious. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, on the snaps that they're being told to read and react, it's going really poorly.
Right.
You can almost see on some snaps, and I have a gif of this as well, of Ragland, where maybe he hesitated for a split second, but where he just dove into the gap, took on a pulling guard, and actually knocked the pulling guard on his butt, because Ragland's a strong guy. He's a thick guy. Mm-hmm. And so you saw him there, and it's like, and that was a stuff, because DJ came in right behind him and finished the playoff. And it made you think, man, sure would be nice to see them going downhill more often. Yeah. And so I do think you're right that it could be somewhat a schematic thing. And if I'm a coach, I understand there's value in saying, hey, players need to execute, which is what Bob Sutton has basically said. Mm-hmm. But there's also value in saying, man, for whatever reason, my guys are struggling with this right now, so we need to do more of that. You know, just do the other thing until we can get some of these other issues sussed out. And Sutton hasn't seemed willing to do that.
Right.
And that's a problem.
And your second issue here, and again, we're talking to Seth Kaiser of Arrowhead Pride. If you go to Arrowhead Pride right now, it's one of the front page articles where you can see all these gifts and everything. You say the second issue that you've seen is that Bob Sutton essentially invites the run.
I was
reading this earlier, and I was thinking about some of the theories that have been thrown around over the last couple of weeks. And I came to the realization that I feel like the only thing in the NFL that I could do as a quarterback, this is literally the only thing I could do as an NFL quarterback, I think I could audible into the right play calls against the Chiefs defense, because if there are two down defensive linemen, we're going to run it. That's all I can do, but I think I could probably do that much. So what did you see from Sutton in this sort of invitation of the run game?
And I've written about this in the past, that the Chiefs with two down linemen, and Tony Romo actually talked about this during the middle of one of the games, pointing out, like, just audible into a run all day. Mm-hmm. So the Chiefs do something a little bit weird with their nickel and dime packages. So they take one defensive lineman off the field. Now, that's very standard, mm-hmm. okay? Now, one problem is it's almost always Benny Logan,
yeah,
who is far and away the best Chiefs defensive lineman at taking on double teams. And being kind of the point of attack guy, you know, the nose guy, whatever you want to call him, okay? And then what they do is they'll say it's Chris Jones and Alan Bailey. That's who it is most of the time. So they have them lined up at defensive tackle spots. Then they line up Houston and Ford or Zombo or whoever at the other spot as if they are somewhat of a wide nine defensive end, maybe just placed just outside the tackle. Mm-hmm. Basically, your standard 43 defensive end spot.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Now, here's one thing. Often, they don't have their hand in the dirt, mm-hmm. which can be a problem for leverage on run plays. So they have them almost playing as though they're 34 off, you know, as though they're 34 linebackers, but they're playing at a DN spot, which would be fine if if it's 3rd and 15.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
But they're doing this on 1st and 10.
Yep.
So you have that issue. Now, something to remember, even though Justin Houston is a stud against the run, he would be an undersized defensive end in a 43.
Yes, for sure.
And he's pretty big. So whoever you put on the other side would be even more undersized, like a Zombo or especially a D Ford. And so what you have there, if you just called that a front four in a 43, mm-hmm. you'd have an incredibly undersized front four. Because normally in a 43 defense, you do have one guy who's more of a nose tackle type, right? Some 320-pounder. Well, if you've got Alan Bailey and Chris Jones out there, you got a couple of 300-pounders. Then you've got a couple of 260-pounders at the end. You're already given up probably an extra, 100 pounds? Mm. Then he compounds that by, and, you know, with the 43, you normally have three linebackers behind you, right?
Right.
Well, they usually, in this formation, they only have one linebacker behind them in Derek Johnson. Then what they do is they bring up Danny Sorensen,
yep.
to play kind of a hybrid linebacker safety spot that we've seen Eric Berry do for years.
Yep.
So then it becomes kind of like a 4-2, right?
Right.
And so here's the problem with that. Now what you've done, let's say you've got an offensive line. I saw multiple formations like this. You've got the Broncos lined up with five offensive linemen and a 260-pound tight end, right?
Yep.
And he's right on the line. And now what you have is an undersized front four, one linebacker, and a 200-pound safety. Mm-hmm. You're probably giving up around 300 pounds there. And that's just at a certain, and that's if you're not including, you know, the C.J. Anderson, the 230-pound running back
right.
coming at you.
Yes.
And so what's happening there is they're set up to fail. Alan Bailey is set up to have to play against a double team, and he's got a lot of good qualities, but he's not quite thick enough in his lower body. He doesn't do a great job against double teams the way, like, Logan can.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Jones is not winning enough one-on-ones. That's a whole separate issue, which I talked about later. But what it is, it's basically set up to fail because it's giving the offensive linemen free shots at Derek Johnson and Danny Sorensen. And Danny Sorensen is not Eric Berry.
No.
He can't take on a free guard. He just can't do it. He can rarely even take on like a free tight end. And it's unreasonable to ask him to do it as though he's a linebacker. Eric Berry can do it, sure. Maybe Cam Chancellor could do it. Well, he could do it for sure. But other than that, there aren't a lot of safeties in the league capable of that. And so that's the problem. That scheme, if you just really look at it in terms of weight, and obviously it's more complicated than that, but if you're giving up 250, 300 pounds, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And so they're set up to fail on downs like that. And it seems like Sutton is really selling out because he wants to be strong against the pass.
And somebody
but at a certain point, yeah.
Somebody today mentioned, we're going to later on in the show, we'll hear from Bob Sutton a little bit, just play a couple of clips because he talked to the media today. And somebody asked me, the way this question was asked, I thought was also worthwhile because he said, it's no secret that you tend to kind of, you know, want to make sure that you're good against the pass first. And then, like, that is common knowledge enough at this point to where you can say it to Bob Sutton and he doesn't ever really fight you on that. He's like, well, yeah. And so, as you mentioned your third point, I'm going to just summarize this one. If you have anything to expand on, great. But the third issue being the defensive line isn't winning enough, that the one-on-one matchups across the board simply aren't getting won often enough. With the issue that Sutton tends to try to defend the pass first and then maybe let the personnel figure out the run game, which obviously isn't working, with the guys losing too many one-on-one matchups, with Derek Johnson looking slower, with all of those things as problems here, how would you go about trying to amend this flaw in the defense?
What I would do one of two things, or both of these things. He could change up his nickel and dime packages to still have three defensive linemen on the field, right?
Right.
Still have Logan and Jones and Bailey and some rotation of Nacho out there, maybe Roy Miller as well.
Yep.
They've got enough defensive linemen to do that and stay fresh. So then you'd have three defensive linemen and you'd still have your two edge guys. Now, that's more of almost like a bare front where you got five guys on the line.
Mm-hmm.
What I would say is that Chris Jones is a talented enough pass rusher, and Bailey and Logan have shown enough strength crushing the pocket to where I don't think you're giving up that much against the pass.
Right, yes.
Now, one issue there is what that means, unless you're planning on rushing five constantly, that means, they're going to be dropping an outside backer in coverage, and everyone's going to freak out if it's Houston.
Right.
Right?
Right.
For good reason.
Right.
But you can adjust that front. You know, you don't have to line them up perfectly in, like, a set that it would look like on a chart.
Yeah.
They've had some formations where they've had Chris Jones line up right on the tackle.
Mm.
He's done a good job with that because tackles aren't physical enough to handle him.
Right.
Most of the time. He made Penn look stupid a few times against the Raiders. And Penn is not an easy lineman to make look stupid.
No.
And so I would run more fronts like that to where you're evening out the weight distribution. And now, yeah, it's still just DJ and Sorensen back there, or maybe even just DJ and you play Sorensen a little farther back.
Mm-hmm.
But that line isn't just giving up the line of scrimmage, because that's what they're doing right now. They are giving up the line of scrimmage. And so that's one solution. The other solution, and you could, like I said, you could maybe combine these two, would be the Chiefs vacillate back and forth between a one-gap and a two-gap system, it seems like. Any given down, I have no idea how they're going to be defending the run, whether they're going to be shooting gaps or, you know, holding linemen up and pretend being two gaps
right.
on the line. I would shift them to almost a pure one-gap system. Everyone has a gap. Attack your gap, and that's that.
Yeah.
I think that would help Chris Jones a ton. He has not developed with regards to consistency and discipline and run defense. And he does much better shooting gaps than he does two-gapping and looking for the running back. There were at least three plays where he actually had his offensive lineman beat. He'd shoved him a yard or two into the backfield, and the running back ran right by him. And he didn't see him in time, so, you know, he gets an arm on him, but that's not enough in the NFL.
Right.
So you assign everyone one gap. That fits to the strength of Nunez Roches. It fits to the strength of Alan Bailey. And, you know, Logan has shown on multiple snaps that he's a little quicker than I thought he'd be.
Mm-hmm.
I think he can do that very well as well. Or have him be the only guy that's eating double teams. And then the additional benefit that would have is with DJ and Ragland showing some hesitation issues. And I'm also seeing that in Sorensen as well. So like you said, this could be a schematic thing.
Right.
If you just give them one gap, they just go.
Yeah.
And then it's a matter you got to trust everyone to do their job. But you just send everyone towards an individual gap and trust these guys to win individual battles. Because I think the defensive linemen we have, we watched them throughout the preseason. They looked like they were going to be a stud defensive line.
Yes. Yeah, I was excited about this personnel group, for sure.
Right, and I think it says something because, you know, in preseason you have a lot more vanilla stuff going on,
mm-hmm.
and it makes you wonder, man, is simpler better with this group? Where you just say, hey, you know, you've got the A-gap, get in there. And, you know, with a guy like Chris Jones, you're guaranteed at least a couple snaps a game. He's going to burst right through that.
Yes.
And even if he doesn't make the tackle, he's going to redirect the running back. And the same thing with an Alan Bailey or Nunez Roches. That's their game. And so I don't understand why you're asking guys whose natural proclivity is towards one gapping, why you're asking them to two gap. And so those are the two things that I would change. Shift to more, I guess you could call it a five-man front, and asking them more to attack rather than read and react, because the read and react isn't working.
Yeah, I think that would be a fantastic adjustment. You mentioned Roy Miller, who hasn't been active for, I think, mm-hmm. 3 or 4 weeks now. He's been a healthy scratch. Ramiq Wilson, right on in that same group. A couple of guys who are, like, made for defending the run. I think it's kind of interesting. And I know that the reason that Reggie Ragland was brought in was to essentially overthrow Ramiq Wilson and to become the guy of the future. But those are two guys built for stopping the run for a defense that's having so much trouble doing that. It seems really silly that they are simply not even active on game day. But I don't know.
It is interesting how far Wilson's fallen out of favor, because you do have, like, you know, other inside linebackers, not just Ragland, that are active.
Right.
I always viewed Wilson as better in coverage, and especially zone coverage, than he was against the run. But what's interesting to me is that they bring in Ragland, a thumper.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he was at Alabama. He's a downhill player. That's why Rex Ryan loved him. And they're asking him to read and react instead, from everything I can see. And it's just, it's kind of the whole square peg and a round hole thing. It's just not, he might make it work, but are you really maximizing his talent there? Now, it's still his job to execute, but I saw a couple snaps where he didn't hesitate and he just laid into an offensive lineman, and he is a strong man.
Yeah.
And he could help, but he doesn't help if he's on his heels being engaged by a guard 4 yards off the line of scrimmage. He's not helping there.
And that seems like maybe the most obvious overarching flaw of Bob Sutton is that he has sort of a similar streak to Andy Reid, where he trusts his system over everything, including over his players. And it seems like Andy Reid's done a pretty good job of getting guys that do what he wants to do. Bob Sutton seems to be working with pieces that have some pretty obvious strengths, some ways that they could build a pretty good defense here, but he is so slow to adapt to the personnel around him.
And that's kind of what it's looking like. And, you know, I've given Sutton credit in the past for adapting to losses. You know, Eric Berry was out a lot of 2014, and they did really well. The more I'm thinking, the more I go back to wondering, did the defense adapt so well in 2014 because Sutton adjusted, or was it because their backup safeties were Hussein Abdullah and Tyvon Branch?
Yes, yes.
Two very solid do-it-all safeties. Because, and this is no disrespect to Daniel Sorensen or Murray, neither of them is nearly as good as Abdullah, and neither of them, I don't think, is as well-rounded a player as Branch.
No, you're right.
And so that's where you're having these problems. I think Sutton was able to get away with doing what he's been doing and sell out against the pass. And the Chiefs have had a real good pass defense for years now. And I think part of that was because they could get away with it in part because it's a passing league, but also in part when you have all pros at certain positions, like inside linebacker and strong safety, and one of your outside linebackers, you can get away with things because the execution, because they'll just make plays.
Yep.
And unfortunately, with DJ not playing at the same level, Eric Berry on crutches, you can't get away with those same things because it's just not the same thing. So you got to rely on what the strengths of your defense really are. And at this point, I do think it's more of an attacking defensive line would do better than trying to hold up blockers and clean up for the linebackers and safeties, because that's just not working.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that. That's absolutely the more logical direction. I have two more questions for you, Seth. We're talking to Seth Kaiser, Arrowhead Pride. If you want to read about the run defense, go to arrowheadpride.com. It's one of the front page articles right now. You can also see all of his stuff at RealMNChiefsFan on Twitter. Two different questions in two different directions here. First of all, the Chiefs started Kenneth Acker on Monday night in place of Terrence Mitchell. The logic behind it was sort of weird. Andy Reid said something about that sometimes for a guy to take a step forward, he's got to take a step back first, something like that. So in, 30 seconds or so, why do you think the Chiefs did that? And do you think that Kenneth Acker is a better outside corner than Terrence Mitchell is?
I think it was to light a fire under Mitchell, and I think Andy Reid's comments made that pretty clear.
Yes.
And one reason I think that is because I think Mitchell is a significantly superior corner to Acker.
Okay.
And frankly, the game, I haven't reviewed his all 22, but the game kind of confirmed that for me. He, especially when you rewatch, a lot of the catches that were made were when Acker was supposed to be in coverage.
Interesting. That's good. That's what I thought whenever I heard that from Andy Reid. Is it seemed like a motivational tactic of some sort. Doing that for a full game against a division opponent is kind of a weird time for it, but also going up against Trevor Siemian seems like the perfect time to do it. So maybe that was planned out.
And I think, honestly, someone commented to me about, the weird play to Tyreek Hill and all that.
Yeah.
I really think that Andy Reid had very little fear the Broncos were going to beat them.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And honestly, neither did I. After they even just went up 7-0, I was like, oh, that's over. This game, I was not stressed out that entire game.
Yep. Even as a Chiefs fan, which is saying something, because I get stressed out. I get stressed out whenever they, whenever a 14-point lead becomes an 11-point lead against literally anybody. Was not the case on Monday night. Okay, and the thing that we've been promising to talk about on this show for an hour and a half today, Tom Bahali is back with the Chiefs. He was activated off the PUP list today. A little bit of kind of drama around that yesterday because the expectation was that he would be back yesterday. He wasn't, but he's back now today. Assuming that his health is no longer a concern, which would be kind of a shock if it was at this point, I would think, and expecting that the Chiefs are not holding him in a doghouse for some reason, what kind of impact do you think he could have on this defense all around?
I think it might be instantaneous because it sounds like Dee Ford is having some back issues.
Yeah.
And, I mean, what they always say, you never had back problems.
Right.
We saw that with Poe.
Yep.
Now, Ford's a pretty athletic guy, but, I mean, that's scary. And so it could be that he'll be able to jump in right away. Last year, he wasn't as good a pass rusher as he's been in previous years, but he was still a very good one.
Yep.
He was able to win one-on-one matchups quite a bit. And so I think he'll bring that to the table. He's a guy that offenses have to respect when they prepare for him, in a way that they don't really have to with Frank Zombo,
right,
who is, a good backup, but he's not particularly great at anything. The other thing that I think he brings is he's rested and he's hungry. I mean, he's with his personality, he's been chomping at the bit to play.
Yes.
And I think the Chiefs defense could use a little bit of that right now.
For
The only player that I see consistently fired up is Houston. And I suppose Chris Jones, too. He's pretty fired up quite a bit.
Yeah.
But, I mean, honestly, I think they could use a little more attitude, a little more whatever those things that we all make, now that we have analytics, we all make fun of people for saying big things like grit and stuff.
Right.
But you know what? That does matter.
Yeah, of course.
And so I think he could help bring a little bit of that attitude back to the defense, a little bit of pride. And you've seen in years past, he and Houston really feed off each other. And I think it'll be good to have some of that back. Now, it'll be interesting to see how they work him back into the fold. But especially with Ford getting injured, it'll be good to have him there at least as an option. It would be great if the whole purpose of this was to keep him fresh for half a season, and a playoff run, I mean, that'd be spectacular.
Yes, that was awesome.
But we'll see, because, yeah, we all know that he wants more snaps.
Yep.
So it'll be interesting to see what he does.
Seth Kaiser of Arrowhead Pride. You can follow him on Twitter at RealLemonChiefsFan. You can read his stuff at Arrowhead Pride. He has the Chief in the North podcast, and he will be representing me in court whenever my aggressive cuddling habit takes over my life and becomes an official problem. Seth,
sure,
we've got to go,
sure.
But I could talk to you all day, not only about legal advice for me, but also about everything going on with the Chiefs. Thank you, as always, for the time.
Yep, thanks for having me.
It's good to know that I got somebody in my corner whenever I need it most. Seth is that guy. Also, we didn't say the M word one time. But that we spent so much time dancing around that topic during the preseason, and now look at this, talking about run defense and stuff. It's honestly a little bit sad. Thank you again, though, to Seth. Whenever we come back, we'll talk about Tom Bahali. It's just, I don't actually mean that. I'm just saying it because that's sort of how this show's gone.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Durf-a-durf-a-durf.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
Ugh, it's been the weirdest show ever. Thank you again to Seth Kaiser. You follow him already. If you don't, you're never going to, I guess. If you care about the Chiefs this much and you've listened to this much of the show, you don't already follow him everywhere and listen to his podcast, then you don't actually care that much, I guess. I don't know. I don't know how you could not follow him. You know what? I wonder how many Twitter followers Seth has. I'm guessing it's a very healthy number, which I have a point to. Let's see. Seth has 7,600 followers. He has half as many followers as Todd Lebo, who tweeted out Nathan's phone number earlier. Like, if Seth tweeted out your phone number, Beards, you would have half as much traffic. That's insane.
Well, half of zero is...
Good point. Apparently, Papa John's CEO lost $70 million in one day after he made his comments about the NFL, which is hilarious.
No, really?
Hilarious.
Great idea. Let's blame the NFL for our bad pizza.
Yeah, man. Fighting the NFL is usually a pretty bad bet.
Oh, also, can we go ahead and play that Papa John's commercial?
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry. All right. So, good call. Good
Thank
call.
Thank you.
I saw on Twitter today that let me just set this up like with this much. Here's a Papa John's commercial, a commercial for Papa John's, in which Cowboys owner Jerry Jones raps. You heard me clearly. That's exactly what I said. One more time, for those in the back, here is a Papa John's commercial with a rapping Jerry Jones.
When I'm Cowboy Stadium or sitting at home and I hear Papa John's pizza for Jerry Jones, yo, it lights me up like a Roman candle with toppings and flavor almost too good to handle. Cowboys, five stars, what I get. It's like a Papa John's Pepsi, double threat. Get a Papa John's large with up to five toppings and a 2-liter Pepsi. People are swappers because there's no better value. Yo, catch my ride. Cowboys, five-star combo for $10.99.
I'm just tearing the paper in the studio to shreds, because if I don't, I'm afraid I'm going to walk away from my microphone, walk into the control room, and just punch Beards. Not because any of this is Beards' fault, just because I have so much tense energy from listening to that.
Can I submit? So, I heard that earlier, and I just kind of went down a rabbit hole of bad athlete commercials.
Sure.
I have one submission.
How long is this?
30 seconds.
All right, fine.
The $5 box, it rocks, it rocks. It rocks for a meal with lots and lots. It rocks for a jock, it rocks for a fox. It rocks blocking shots on guys with dreadlocks.
What comes in this box that rocks?
A cheesy gordita, crunch to much.
We are Scream for Burrito Supreme.
A crunchy taco and cinnamon twists?
Both on the list. And wait, let me think. An ice cold drink. That is lots and lots in just one box. It is only $5, and that's why it rocks.
That was, I believe, Charles Barkley singing a Taco Bell song?
It was.
Football? On your phone?
No, get out of here. Peyton Manning is not welcome here, and you know that. Wow, good work, Beards. Hold
what about on. Eli? It's
football on your that doesn't sound like Eli at all.
I know. It
doesn't sound like Eli Manning. He has a beautiful singing voice, apparently.
But yeah, that Jerry Jones commercial, you should see the video of that as well.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Just
Google,
as good.
Google Jerry Jones Papa John's commercial. I'm guessing there's not two results for that. I'm guessing it's just the one video.
I need to know when that's from, though. That cannot be recent.
I mean, we could find that out. Papa John's Jerry Jones commercial. Someone has to have... All right, so it looks like the first version of this was uploaded in 2007.
Okay, that makes sense.
So, 10 years ago, but he's been doing more commercials, maybe?
Oh,
he got punched in a Papa John's commercial?
By the way, I just Google searched Papa John's Jerry Jones commercial. The top stories. Some think Jerry Jones was behind the Papa John's rant.
I saw that.
What?
And now also there are now people on Twitter who are saying, or like other pizza companies who are saying, like DiGiorno, it says it's like, excuse me. DiGiorno on
some
Twitter.
Statement they made.
DiGiorno on Twitter said, better pizza, better sales.
Ouch.
It's
That's
amazing.
Good.
SB Nation actually has an article charting Papa John's sales along with when Jerry Jones rapped and then stopped rapping for Papa John's.
Did he rap more than once?
I mean, this is an important question that I don't know. They're saying that the only way that the Papa John's could be saved is by Jerry Jones coming out of rap retirement and rapping more. And I think that is exactly right.
Do we need that in our life?
Yeah. Dude, I didn't know that. What we just heard, that's huge. Really quick, there's a thing that's been going on Twitter. ESPN has a new social media policy, and there's a snippet of it that says, do not break news on Twitter. We want to serve fans in the social sphere, but the first priority is to ESPN news and information efforts. Public news can be distributed without vetting. However, sourced or proprietary news must be vetted by the TV or digital news desks. So here's the thing.
So this is the Adrian Wojnarowski rule.
Right. It's if put into place, if... strongly instituted, it would kill Adam Schefter and Woj. But they've actually had this rule since, I believe, 2011.
Apparently hasn't been followed.
Right. Well, so here's the thing. It says, this is from ESPN President John Skipper. Talks about his engaging with a number of colleagues, including journalists, editors, and producers, about their social media rules. He says, this part of the policy has not changed, and our top reporters make their content available to ESPN's news desk and tweet it out at the same time. What that statement sounds like to me, our top reporters make their content available to ESPN's news desk and tweet it at the same time, is essentially saying, yeah, whenever Schefter or Woj tweet something, we also see it and then go. Like, so I don't think it's actually killing Schefter or Woj, even though that's what it looked like at face value. Right now, just kind of in a funny little cross-section of what we're talking about, on ESPN, one of the sideline reporters is literally reading from her phone. As I'm trying to figure out right now, it looks like there's some news about Kelvin Benjamin playing or not playing tonight. But I haven't seen anything about it yet, so keep an eye on it. Something interesting in the game. Oh, man, somebody made popcorn in this building.
I've been trying to figure out what that smell is.
Yeah, that's popcorn.
Yeah.
I think Danny slightly overcooked some popcorn.
Both our doors are shut, too.
I know. It is permeating
wow.
through the cracks. It has some pungent popcorn.
Yeah.
Again, slightly overcooked. And I don't want to fight with Danny or anything, but that's the...
That's okay. He's not listening.
Oh, yeah. No, I know. All right, I see nothing about DiGiorno has tweeted at Papa John's, let us know when you have hashtag new pizza. Because Papa John's has tweeted hashtag new Twitter bio. Oh, no. Is Papa John's? Oh, Lord.
What's it say?
Papa John's new Twitter bio. Frozen pizza equals the pizza equivalent of a participation trophy.
I mean, they're not. Wrong.
No, it's not. They are wrong. I'm not going to go get frozen pizza whenever I can have fresh pizza. But Papa John's is getting absolutely bodied on Twitter right now. Like, that tweet has 226 likes and 363 replies.
Nice.
So DiGiorno responded with hashtag new Twitter bio with hashtag let us know whenever you have hashtag new pizza.
Right now, it feels like Papa John's is like the third place bronze medal person, just
for sure,
shoving it in the face of the fourth place guy.
Yes. All right, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go home. I'm going to go to the store. I'm going to buy some frozen pizza, and I'm going to eat that while I watch Thursday Night Football. We talked about Tomba a little bit there with Seth Kaiser. I did want to talk about a couple other things that were interesting. So the Chiefs did, obviously, they activated Tomba Holly off the PUP list today, and Therese Paylor said that at one point yesterday the plan was to absolutely to activate well, the plan was to, quote, absolutely activate Tomba Holly and practice him. Something changed since Therese has called it a hiccup in yesterday's roll of things. Arrowhead Pride put out a couple of questions that I thought were interesting and worth talking about. He said, why mention Tomba's representatives? Andy Reid mentioned it was between Brett Veach and Tomba Holly and his representatives. That was weird. I was under the impression, Arrowhead Pride wrote, that he was on the PUP list for health reasons. So is this about whether or not he's healthy? Is there something else going on there? Is he healthy? All those questions are slightly less important now because he is back. So at least there's that. And then, as I said, Sutton was asked today about some defensive things. We might touch on that whenever we come back. I've been promising a story about the Chiefs and Patriots and Steelers and how they all stack up for a while, so we might just skip ahead to that instead of listening to Bob Sutton drone on about how the defense is a team game for 3 minutes. And honestly, at this point, maybe we'll come back. I'll listen to this voicemail that I got today. And whenever we come back, it'll be that someone has tweeted out my phone number or that someone has called me looking for Beards' phone number because they want to date him. Literally any of those things at this point could be on the table. Maybe it's somebody calling me for asking for cuddling tips, or maybe it's someone calling me asking for legal advice or to give me legal advice. I truly have no idea.
Do you issue subpoenas over phones, over voicemail?
I don't know. A subpoena? No. A restraining order?
Maybe?
Maybe.
Okay.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Deshaun Watson's been a thrill. He looks really good. I'm glad that he's good because I like good young quarterbacks. Like, I'm excited that Carson Wentz exists. I'm excited that Jared Goff is playing well.
With Joshua Briscoe.
But I will never slander the good, pure name of Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes forever!
On ESPN Kansas City.
I'm mad. I'm angry. I am so frustrated.
With what? Do tell.
All right, so listen. It's 2017. If you call me and I don't answer, hang up and then text me. I can see your message in silence during a show, literally whenever. I don't check my phone during the show, really. I'm distracted enough as it is. But this is also the first voicemail I've gotten since I've gotten my new phone a few weeks ago. So I called it during the break. How long was that break, Beards?
3 minutes.
All right, so it doesn't feel like, it felt like an eternity. I spent every single moment of the break, from the moment we went to break until the moment we came back, getting my voicemail box set up, just with all the default stuff. Just say my number whenever you call me, just use the default greeting, whatever. And then it finally, as the liner was playing, so here's your number from your message from phone number 913, blah, 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 blah.
3-810-810.
And so it played the message. Well, actually, here's what it did. Here, I'm gonna recreate it. This is phone number from the message from 4:30 p.m. from phone number 913. To replay, press 1. To save, press 2. To delete, press 3. Did you notice what wasn't there in my little recreation? Do you notice what wasn't there? An actual message. It was half a second of pure silence. There was no voicemail. I got the notification. I got the whole thing set up now. But there was no actual voicemail. Also, Kelvin Benjamin isn't playing tonight, and that makes me mad. Because I wanted to watch him in the Bills' offense tonight against the Jets.
Warriors Spurs.
Go to Austin's, go watch Warriors Spurs.
It starts at 7.
A lot of angst that segment, and we're not going to even have time to get to the thing I've been trying to talk about for 2 days. I got to figure out whose phone number this is. I got to figure out who called me and didn't text me, but I don't really want to call them back. If this was earlier in the show, I would consider just calling them now. Because it's probably like somebody just trying to sell. But it is a 913 number, so I maybe that's it. I wanted to talk at some point about the Chiefs, Patriots, and the Steelers. Because those are obviously the three contenders going forward. And Pro Football Focus put together a rest of the season projection for each of these three teams, looking at the strength of schedule to date and the remaining strength of schedule. And it's kind of bad news for the Chiefs. The Steelers are projected to finish with 11.3 wins. Obviously, the decimals are for the margins for error and everything. The Steelers have played the sixth most difficult schedule in football so far. They have the 25th. Strongest schedule going forward. The Patriots, projected for 11.9 wins, so 12 essentially, have had the 10th hardest schedule to date. They have the 14th most difficult schedule remaining. The Chiefs are projected for 11.1 wins with a 14th ranked strength of schedule to date and the 26th strongest schedule going forward. And here's a little blurb from it. The Chiefs were the NFL's last undefeated team, but have wobbled since that point with back-to-back defeats before riding the ship with a win this past week. They still look like one of the better teams in the league, and their strength of schedule gets significantly more beneficial to them over the remainder of the season. They'll hope to get more performances out of tight end Travis Kelce that they got on Monday night, as he is now the league's highest-graded tight end. But what it says there is the Patriots are probably going to end up with a win more than the Steelers and the Chiefs based off of their evaluations. And if the Chiefs and Steelers tie, the Chiefs lose. Because the Steelers have the head-to-head advantage of having beaten the Chiefs in Arrowhead in a game that will haunt this team forever. I heard that. Beard started playing the wrong thing.
Nope, you didn't hear anything.
Back behind the curtain. Back behind the curtain with you. Also, Jimmy Garoppolo might not play this year, according to head coach Kyle Shanahan. Which makes sense, because they're just tanking. They want to give Jimmy Garoppolo, whatever, the best receiver in the draft, or the best offensive lineman in the draft. I totally get that. But I thought that was kind of startling, and also made me wonder, like, why would you make that trade now? See if the value goes down. I don't know. And again, the Packers tried to steal away Brian Hoyer before the Patriots signed him because Mike McCarthy got angry whenever Colin Kaepernick's name was brought up. And now apparently
we're happy with the quarterback situation we have here.
Now Brian Hoyer is here now. So you're interested in him? Okay, great. Wow. Super weird show today. We also have some stuff we haven't gotten to in the last 2 days. I don't know if this has been a really good week of shows or a really trash one. It's been very on brand. I'll give us that much. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye, Mom.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City.